Today we have Kathy Pooler with us. Kathy is the owner, chief blogger, and inspiration behind the Memory Writer's Journey, a blog which she has worked on since 2009. Kathy, welcome.
Thank you, Denise. It's an honor to be here.
It's an honor to have you. Let's start with your blog. Can you give us a little bit of the background on how you started on this prolific blog? It is an incredible piece of work that you have done.
Oh, thank you. Well, to be honest with you, I really resisted it. It was October of 2009, 3 months before I actually started the blog, that I attended a Writer's Digest Editor's Intensive Weekend where we could bring the first 50 pages of our manuscript, and that's about all I had, actually. So I thought, well, I have enough. I'm going to go. And we had the opportunity to be critiqued by editors such as Jane Friedman, Chuck Zambuccino, and Alice Pope. And I remember sitting in there were about 30 of us, and there was a little table of four of us who were doing memoir. And they were talking about the importance of social media and establishing an author platform. These are all things that were very new to me, and I didn't think I would like it at all. And I actually raised my hand, and I said, I just don't see, you know, I think it'd be more of a distraction. I just want to write. And they kind of looked at me quizzically, and I thought something about the way they looked at me stayed with me when I left. And I kept thinking about this blog thing, and I didn't know much about it, but I knew that I could do a WordPress.com for free, and thought, okay. So one day when I was working as a nurse practitioner, and I was covering for another nurse practitioner in her office, and I sat there, and there was a quote by Goethe on her desk, which said, "What you can do or dream, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it." And something clicked for me. That really jump-started me. And I thought, when I got home that night, I wrote out my first blog. And it was about, I am a writer. I'm going to call myself a writer. Hello, world, I am a writer. And it's kind of like a fake it till you make it type of thing. And I had no idea where it was going to take me or that I really needed to really work on it so hard. It was really like a giant leap of faith. And what happened is topics just kept coming as I moved along in my own journey. I started taking classes with Linda Joy Myers, memoir classes, and I didn't even know what a memoir was, to be honest with you. I did not know the difference between a memoir and an autobiography. So that kind of shows you how green I was when I took this leap.
Mm-hmm.
And it just has, it's like it found me. And it has led the way, and I have blogged every week, sometimes two and three times a week. I've not missed one week since then, and I think it's because it's something I love to do. So,
how do you see this the blogging contributing to the actual writing experience? Because there are two foci here. One is kind of concerned with the process, and the writer actually does the process. Do you see a compatibility between the two, or do you see still any opposition?
Oh, I think, well, it's a really good question because I think everybody has a unique perspective on that. The way I feel, it just keeps my creative juices flowing and keeps me connected with people, and it's really helped me in my journey because, well, first of all, it forces me to write something, and I think that's the best thing we can do is to just keep writing no matter what avenue we take. So it forces me to be able to communicate clearly and concisely and in a way that will engage people, and that has helped me in writing my memoir. And then getting feedback, too, on my writing has helped. So to me, it's been a very gratifying experience. And the thing I'd like to say that is so important, you shouldn't blog if you hate it or if you don't want to blog because it will show.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to have, you have to buy into it, and you have to claim it as your own, and you have to, because that will show to your reader. So don't do it because you have to. There's other ways of establishing a platform. There's all kinds of avenues you can do that.
Good advice. So, good advice. You know, one comment, one something that you said a little earlier is that you began thinking of yourself as I am. You started saying I am a writer.
Right.
That's an assignment that I have given in my own Turning Memories into Memoirs workshops. At a certain point,
mm-hmm.
I send people home and I say, before the next session that we have together, I would like for you to tell 5 people that you are a writer. Not that you're thinking of writing, not that you're writing, that you are a writer. And I think that's really quite important. Can you address that in your, both for yourself and for those who are listening to us?
Oh, I just think it's very empowering. It's like you have to just keep telling yourself, and then pretty soon it's internalized and you say, yes, I am a writer. I am a writer because I write. It's not you know, you are an author if you publish, but you are a writer if you write. And it doesn't matter if you write in your journal, if you write just for your family, or just for yourself. You are a writer. And I think it was a very empowering experience for me because I didn't view myself. I didn't think I was legitimate, you know, because I hadn't published anything.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I think it's an empowering message that you give yourself, and it keeps you going on the journey.
Absolutely. This is an interesting distinction that you have made between writer and author. I hadn't quite made it, but it makes a lot of sense to me hearing it. I have sometimes defined writer as someone who writes in order to access meaning. Like sometimes I don't know what I really think about something until I sit down and either put it in my journal or mm-hmm. put it in a piece of writing. What's your experience of that?
Oh, I think writing helps us make sense of our life. And I think when I have put the words on the page, whether it's, you know, in a blog or in my journal, which is a personal thing, I can look at it, and it's very clarifying, and it adds focus. Rather than having it churn inside me, it becomes noticed. And I can write something, and then 2 weeks later, I can look back, and I can say, wow. I can have insights. I can say, oh, my gosh, I have a pattern here. It just really adds a lot of focus to life. I mean, that's been my experience.
Absolutely. You know, you had a recent post about fiction techniques and creative writing, and it made me, wonder about the role of fiction and the role of memoir in my own life. I started off as a fiction writer, and at some point it was very active, trying to be active and attempting and actually more active as a fiction writer. And then I discovered memoir, and fiction for me fell really far behind. But the training that I received then in fiction techniques and dialogue, setting, suspense, foreshadowing, all of that, I have used in my memoir writing. I wonder if you might address any attraction that you have for fiction writing and other kinds of writing, and place that in the context of your obviously great love of the memoir.
Oh, a good memoir is written like a novel. It's, you have to do all the same things with a memoir that you do with fiction. With a memoir, it's the other dimension is it's about real people, so you have to deal with those sensitivities. It's about your own truth, so you have to dig deep and you have to face things you might not want to face. So there's a whole lot of other layers there to memoir, but the basics of good storytelling are the same, I think, for both memoir and for fiction. So I think there's a great association there, and I think it's really important. I love fiction too, and you know, but a memoir really has to read like fiction
mm-hmm.
in order to be compelling and engaging. Otherwise, I mean, we don't want to just list a litany of things in our lives. No, I mean, that's boring. Who wants to hear that? What is our story? What is our purpose for telling it? What is the reader going to gain from it? What is the takeaway? You know, I mean, that all requires all those things, the hook, the narrative arc, the dialogue, the scenic details, the pace of it. What, you know, what is the purpose for adding details? There has to be a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
That goes back to, you know, knowing what you're, why you want to write it in the first place. What is your theme? What is your message?
Mm-hmm. I have found that when that in writing the memoir, that the spark comes from the truth that you're almost embarrassed to be speaking, mm-hmm. and not. I don't mean by this that it's, you know, kiss and tell, and it's an attacking truth, but it's something about yourself that you feel that you don't particularly want to share, not because, what should I say? It's somehow embarrassing. Perhaps it's not socially acceptable, or perhaps mm-hmm. it doesn't fit into your ego view of yourself, but you understand that this is something that explains about you in a way. And recently writing my high school memoir, I came across that and realized that I had been avoiding telling a truth.
Mm.
And it felt like my memoir was flat as a result.
Oh,
and once I dared do it, I thought it changed, but we'll see. Can you address that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we all have stories that we tell ourselves, our lives. And I think when we write, we can reframe our stories. Like for me, when I started writing in the workshops that I was taking, the critique partners would say, well, why did you do that? And who is this person? And why did you allow that? And it's like, you know, it really forced me to dig into material that was embarrassing. Like, yeah,
mm-hmm.
why did I do that, make that self-defeating decision, and why did I repeat it? I mean, what was wrong with me? You know, and I went through all that. But through the process, I learned to have compassion for that young woman.
Mm-hmm.
I learned self-forgiveness. And I think that's an important message, because that's how I want to reach my readers, that you can have things in your life that you're not proud of. And if you expose them and then show how you reached a point of self-forgiveness and healing, that's, you know, that the reader can connect to their own stories. And there is the transformational aspect, both for the reader and for the writer, in memoir.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing journey, really. But it's hard. It's very hard.
Absolutely. Now, I just want to cue the listeners that you have a memoir in the making, or towards the end of the making, and we're going to talk about it in a minute, in a while, but I just want the listeners to know that there's a treat coming up as you're going to speak about your memoir. I want to ask you, at what point did you begin to add other writers to your blog? Because the other writers are now a really lovely feature of your blog.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, that just happened naturally, to be honest with you. I was taking a course with Dan Blank, Build Your Author Platform course, in 2011, and we talked about how we should guest post on each other's blog. So we did that. And then pretty soon I would get requests for people to do guest posts on my blog. Or I would see something really interesting that really aligned with my brand of sharing hope one story at a time. And I would reach out to people and say, or I would read a book and I'd say, oh, and I'd do a review and I'd say, you know, I'd really like to feature you on my blog. So it worked both ways, and it still is. And I'm at the point where actually I get a lot of requests from like professional bloggers who want to add links and all that, and I have to say, you know, it doesn't really align with my brand, and so I'm sorry, but you know, thank you very much for your interest, but this isn't going to work. I mean, they'll say, you know, I do blogging about traveling to other countries, and I'll say, well, that sounds nice, but no. I mean, I think it's really important to be dedicated to your brand and what your message is, and you know, it's like you have a promise to your readers, and you don't want to don't want to let them down.
Yeah, certainly the idea of that, the hope that runs through your stories, mm-hmm. Is certainly very strong. It's a thread that has run through many of the interviews. If we could just segue just a little bit into the interviews, you've given us a sense of your platform that you are seeking to create. Can you perhaps just speak a bit about what are some of the characteristics that the writers that you are interested in have? And by this, we're going to be talking about what makes for successful memoirs, so I think these questions are all part of a chain. So right now, I wonder if you might talk about some of the characteristics that you find interesting in the writers that you interview.
Okay, probably the strongest thread in the interviews I've conducted about memoir writing is how the reader and how the writer has been transformed in the process. And I like to ask questions about their own journey, like why did they want to write this particular story, and what message do they want to bring across. And I might also do a post on the path to publication, because I think that's which is what I'm in the process of. So, you know, it's kind of like we're all learning from each other. So I'm paying forward what I've learned from other people about certain things. And tell me your story. Tell me what you have to say. And that usually generates a lot of really interesting conversation. And oftentimes I'll get ideas from the comments about what they need. It's like a needs assessment. And so it'll give me blog ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what are some of the topics that people are interested in? So I like to hear what path people take in their journey and what writing their memoir was like. Now the topics, of course, I'm a nurse, so I do lean towards health issues as well. Like I have something on. Like I interviewed my friend whose husband has Alzheimer's, and I've interviewed people who have post-traumatic stress disorder and that type of thing. And one of the writers, Louise Mathewson, did a poetry book on surviving traumatic brain injury and what that was like, and that was a very popular post. And so people want to know, you know, these are life issues. And with my health background, I think I want to kind of tie that all in. And the same with abuse situations, because my first memoir is about getting into and out of two emotionally abusive marriages. And so, you know, I want to know other people's stories, because there's a lot of people out there that need to hear these stories.
And there certainly is a lot of work done on writing as a healing experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Linda Joy Myers has her book, and Louise DeSalvo has a book, and there are many others. I'd like to ask you if there, in the people that you've interviewed and in your own experience of writing, is there a success trait that you have discerned for the process of writing that leads to success. So I guess what I'm asking you is there a best practice that the writers you've worked with have engaged in that have facilitated their plunge into the experience, the transformation that the memoir is, and not only that plunge, but coming out of it with a quote-unquote product?
Well, first of all, I think best practice, that term, I think I'd like to say that best practice is what works for the individual.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all have to find our own way through the process, but certainly the people that are successful are the people who keep writing and are persistent, and the people who are clear on their purpose for writing. They're connected to the purpose of their story. I think are the most successful. Now, some people claim that meeting a specific word count every day is important for them, whereas some people might write three times a week. You know, you all have to find your way through the process. But I think the idea that you're committed to excellence, you're committed to being persistent, persevere, and just never give up,
mm-hmm.
And just keep writing. That's probably the best piece of advice I've heard, and that makes sense to me.
That makes sense to me, too.
Yeah, and then find your own way. Like, for me, sometimes the best thing I can do is go out for a walk in the garden or the woods and clear my head. I mean, we all have to have our own ways of tapping into our creative wells. And some people like writing prompts, some people don't.
Mm-hmm.
Journaling has been a seed for my memoir. And so that works for me. It might not work for somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, and then there's that old pantser and planner. You know, some people like to outline, some people like to just go by the seat of their pants.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I mean, are there rules? I don't know. I think the main rule is keep writing.
Keep writing
whichever way you can, and write as much as you can, and don't give up.
Kind of what I call the memoir, staying in the memoir conversation, however you define that conversation.
I can't tell you the times I've walked away from it and just said, oh, I can't deal with this anymore. And I put it away for, you know, a couple months, and then I pick back up again, or I get edits back from an editor and I'd say, oh, I can't do this, you know, and then I get back into it. And so, you know, is that wrong? I don't know.
Well, if it works for you, it isn't.
Nah, right.
You talked about a connection with purpose seems to be a success factor. Can you talk about how our listeners can connect with, discover their purpose and then connect with it so that they persevere?
Okay. Well, if you keep writing, I'm speaking from my own lived experience. If I keep writing, the story that I need to tell will reveal itself. So mm-hmm. sometimes I will sit and have an intention to write something, and somebody I don't expect shows up in my writing. And it's like a surprise, and I think the best thing I can do is step out of the way and let the story flow as it's going to flow, and then get it on paper. It's raw. Get it on paper. It's not going to be published. And then work with it. Now, being connected, why do I want to write this story? Why would anybody want to pick up my book and spend the money and spend the time reading this? So I have to be clear on why I want to write it. Who do I want to write to? Who is my audience? Who's going to benefit from my story? And if I have a clear picture of why I'm writing, that helps me stay focused in the story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, purpose is very interesting. I just finished, in the fall, in the fall of 2013, I finished writing my mother's memoir. And my mother's book, you know, had the purpose of keeping her story alive. So that was very, very important. But it had this other purpose. And to me, that other purpose was also very, very good. I wanted to write about having been a person from a working class family in the middle of the 20th century. Mm. How did she make sense? It was almost like beyond just her individual life, I wanted to somehow encapsulate the experience of her as a representative of her ethnic community and of her working class background. And that became something that I think helped make the story a really quite a larger story. I'm just beginning on the outreach for that book, but already I've had a lot of people who have said, oh my gosh, I know this story. This is the story of my, you know, of my mother, and okay. I'm not even Franco-American. I'm Greek, you know. Uh-huh. And whenever I hear that, I think, oh, I've achieved one of the basic connections was to make the story larger than just my mother's story. What's your experience of making stories larger?
Well, it goes back to the purpose. Why am I writing this? And I'm so glad you brought this up because I think it's so important to realize that even though memoir is about your personal story, it has to be more than your story. Like you say, it has to be bigger. It has to have a universality to it, but you have your own. This is how you're telling this universal truth, but it's through your individual twist. It's your individual perspective, your particular situation. You are reaching out universally to people through your story. So it sounds like what you've done is very intriguing, and people will connect with that. And the other thing is the importance. I think you did one of these lessons on my blog about the importance of location and place and mm-hmm. setting, you know, and that's really so important because that's what brings the reader into the story.
Mm-hmm. Are there, you know, so if, as I agree with you, and we, you know, we're both in accord that this idea of making a story slightly larger, a little more universal, so that people who aren't exactly like oneself or like the subject of a memoir still identify because there's a human trait. Are there any other elements that you would say, just to be explicit for the listener today? The listener is a person engaged in writing, and that person wants to succeed at his or her endeavor. Is there something else that you could share that makes for this a successful memoir?
Well, you have to be clear on the theme. What themes do you want to get across? And you have to make sure that the details of your story fit into that theme. In other words, you can't bring all the details. You might have, you know, it's that kill your darlings.
Mm-hmm.
You write these wonderful stories and you just love them and you want to include them in your memoir. Well, my developmental editor just slashed a couple chapters. No way, no way. It doesn't fit in. It's a great story. It does not add to the story. It does not fit in with your theme. It's a distraction, even though it's a well-written story. So you have to be willing to cut out things that don't fit into what your message is, what your main theme is. Am I answering your question?
Yes, that's a wonderful kill your darlings. It's so
yes.
hard to do.
It
it's
is.
Deathless prose that you've just composed.
But, you know, don't get rid of your darlings. Keep them away because you can repurpose them in other ways.
Yes.
In other stories, individual stories, magazine articles. You know, never throw away these darlings. Just they don't fit they're not a good match for your story.
Well, you know, this experience of killing your darlings and it just leads me to another thought that we as writers, me, you, everybody else, I'm presuming, have our moments of self-doubt. I can't imagine, because I read it all the time, that a writer says, what the heck am I doing here? What do you suggest to the listeners about dealing with their own self-doubts?
Oh, my. We all have them. And we're probably our own worst critics. So we have to learn how to deal with it. Some people write out dialogue. I did a post where I wrote a dialogue to my inner critic. And that helped me because I could personalize it and I could just tell that person off and move on. I think there's all different ways that people do it, but we have to be able to do it. The other thing I think is so crucial is writing is a very lonely experience, if you will, but you really need to have other objective eyes read your work, and you need to be open to how your story can be better, how your writing can be better. So a critique group, taking classes, anything to get feedback so it isn't just you looking at your story, because you are limited in your perspective. This, you know your story. The other thing is, I like to say in regards to that is, one thing I really learned through Linda Joy's class is you're trying to write a scene out. Now, you know the scene. You were there, but the reader wasn't there. So you have to figure out a way to bring the reader into the story without being too distracting. Sometimes too many details are distracting. But you have to remember that the reader knows nothing, and you have to show them, okay, what happened? Even though you're fully aware. I mean, that was like a revelation for me. Oh, yeah, that's right. The reader doesn't know what I mean when I say that. I can't assume the reader knows. But on the other hand, I can't spoon-feed the reader either, because that will insult their intelligence, because readers are smart and they will be able to I mean, it's just such a balance you have to strike. Yeah.
Well, if one example that I oftentimes use in either workshops or when I'm doing coaching is the idea that if you were a film, if you were a filmmaker instead of a writer, and there was a mountain peak near the house, every once in a while the camera would pan the mountain peak to remind you of your location, that, for instance, you're in Colorado, you're not in Maine. And the reader, if the scene is constantly inside the house, for instance, and the mountain peak will play a role in the story, we have to have some reminder that the peak is there. And it's the same way when you're writing. There has to be reminders of what the setting is, and those reminders are particulars of the story. You know, we've talked about memoirs and memoirists, and I've seen some writers who are, say, novelists or poets, and then they write a memoir, and they might write one memoir. And then I've also seen people who have written a series of memoirs, serial memoirs of different aspects, different times of their lives, and that seems to be what they're interested in. I know that the writers that I have worked with, many of them are one-time writers, but some of them are also two- and three-times writers who really don't write much else. Do you have any thoughts on this dual phenomenon?
Oh, well, I think it's really important to don't stop with one book. I mean, if you really want to get out in the publishing world. And it's interesting because when I sent my manuscript to the developmental editor, she says, you've got two stories here, which I never thought I did. She says, there's too much for one memoir in which you've written me. So she cut it. We split it in two, and yes, indeed, I have another memoir coming after this one.
Good.
But you know, the other interesting point is it's such a grueling process to go through writing a memoir.
Yes.
Because, I mean, it just, you have to touch upon so many sensitive and painful areas. You have to worry about, you know, people in the memoir who have to be in the story who are still alive. You have to, all those things you don't have to worry about so much in fiction. Oh, I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Well, we were talking about serial memoirs and people write many memoirs.
Yeah, my point is that a lot of people who've written memoirs, and I could name them, are turning to fiction as their next project.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a statement that sometimes you just give your all in writing the memoir, and it's about you, and you just want to... You just want to create characters on your own and get creative in different ways. So I think that's another phenomenon that's happening. But I think, you know, don't stop at one book. Just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it's, you know, short, I mean, Sharon Lippincott talks about doing short stories, and she just has a new mini-memoir out, Adventures of Chili Head, and that started just... by a fun short story she was writing. And then it morphed into this ebook that is really quite delightful. And so, you know, there's just keep writing and get out of your, let the story happen. Just step out of its way and just go with the flow of it and see where it takes you.
Have you used fiction as a way to get through a memoir? I'll give you an example. In my part is that I get to a part and it's really difficult, and I can't seem in my memoir to get through, and so I'll just fictionalize. I'll make up some dialogue. I'll make up some action of a character who is in a similar situation as I was in, and I have found that character somehow does what the subject of the memoir, me, is unwilling to do, and it has given me insights. Have you ever done work like that?
I haven't, but I think that's an excellent technique to use. I mean, I certainly I read fiction, and of course, always when you're a writer, you have a different lens when you read, and you're looking at, oh, why is this working? It's like, wow. So.
Yeah, well, that kind of fits in with your recent post, I forget her name, the woman from England who wrote about...
Bridget Whalen?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's kind of a continuation. I know I have done that with my dreams also, waking up in the morning, and I have these symbols, these images that are dream symbols and images, and I just simply make a story completely fictionalized, let my imagination go. And there's always a point in that fiction making when I have an aha moment. And so that's where I applied it. I got that in dream analysis, and then I moved that to the memoir.
That sounds like a great idea.
Well, I think it has worked for me. We've kind of talked about telling the truth, and that kind of moves us on to the idea of confessionality. That is, there are those who accuse memoir writing of being confessional. There was an article in, I think it was the New York Times about 2-3 years ago, that just accused memoir writing of being sentimental and confessional.
I remember
and
that article.
Yeah, it was just so
reactive.
Raised
a lot of hackles.
Yes. Well, how about making for our listeners some distinction between confessional writing and a memoir in which there are confessions?
Well,
or do you make the distinction?
Well, I just think of it again. We go back to being connected to the intent of your story. It's essential. And so my understanding of confessional memoir is the need to purge yourself of guilt for some life decisions. One point I like to make is that I believe it's so important to be far enough removed from the story to be able to see it as a story with lessons learned. So if one uses a memoir to get back at or handle a situation, we really lose the thread of the story of redemption and resolution. And so if you I think there can be confessions in a memoir, but you have to give it meaning and purpose to your overall story. Otherwise, nobody wants to read just a litany of confessions with no meaning or resolution attached. What is the purpose for even confessing? You know, so again, what is the story you want to tell? And okay, you make a confession, but what happens after that, and what meaning did you attach to that? And how did you transform from making that confession to the person you are now?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Well, it's a very interesting guideline for listeners, is that at times there are things that you might want to say in your memoir that has a sense of a kind of a kiss and tell. But you're not doing it for sensationalism. You are doing it to understand the path that you took, as you say, towards redemption and revelation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just go for a moment to how can people deal with sensitive material? So some of it is confessional. Some of it is probably what we might just simply call dirty linen, for instance, the alcoholism of a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any suggestions for the writers who are listening today?
Oh, that's such a relevant and complicated question. First of all, I think it's important to get your story out on paper for yourself, the raw facts, the raw feelings. Get it all out. And, you know, as you shape it into a story, you revise, you change names, identifying characteristics, you write disclaimers. And as you move along, you take out anything that does not add to the storyline. Whether or not you talk to the people involved is an individual matter. I think it's always sound advice to seek legal counsel about such matters. In the end, I think you have to make a decision about how important it is to the heart of your story. Never, ever, ever, I think this is pretty obvious, never write with the intent to disparage anyone or hold a grudge against somebody. But the other thing is, in order for the characters to be believable, you have to present them in a balanced way. Nobody's all good or all bad. And I had to do that with, like, my first husband, who's the father of my children, and he's very much alive, and he had many redeeming features. I had to be sure and bring that out. He wasn't all bad. He had a bad problem, but he wasn't a bad person, and I really wanted to work hard on shaping that so that it would be realistic and believable. And, you know, the other thing is, no matter how careful you are, there's always a chance of offending someone
mm-hmm.
else. If they're part of the story. That's why it's so important to be clear on the heart of your story and then your intent in writing it, because, you know, you will weed out the things that may be disparaging that don't really help the story, and that kind of will clean the, you know, make it a cleaner process.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, get it all out, what you have to. Don't show anybody. Don't even tell anybody you're writing about it. Just
mm-hmm.
do it what you have to do, and then as it comes time, you can decide who do you talk to, who you don't talk to, who you just expect is not going to be happy, but oh well. This is your story. This is your truth. Own your truth. You know, it's a process. It's an evolutionary process. That's why it takes so darn long to write a memoir. Because you have to go through this.
I see. I'm just kind of resuming. There are two. I can see two points in all of that sage advice that you have given. One is the other person's feelings, and that you don't have any control. You don't have any control over that. What you do have control is the words that you put on the paper, the organization of the thought, the selection of metaphors that go into the telling of the story. And so that is the part that you have control over. I somehow give this little distinction in both coaching and workshops that if you're telling the quote-unquote truth, and you have a delicious little feeling of revenge in the pit of your stomach,
mm-hmm.
you're probably doing something wrong.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right.
And if you feel like, well, these are unhappy facts, I wish they had not happened, but this is it, and I'm sorry to have to write it, but this is it, and I needed to move on with my story,
yeah.
Then from what you can do, you have probably done the right thing. Comments?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because as I was writing, I probably was more inclined to be disparaged myself versus somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, well, it has to be realistic. You know, I don't want to be like a martyr or a victim here. I have to paint the picture more realistically. And this is the truth as I see it. I didn't, you know. And the other thing is those people that knew me knew my story at the time and knew the behavior of my first husband. You know, so I'm not saying anything that people don't already know. And I've changed the name, and I don't use the last name, so there's no way of identifying him
mm-hmm.
By someone who doesn't know him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like, hey, this is how it happened, and this is how I perceived it happened. And there'll probably be some surprises for some people that were involved in the story.
Mm.
Like, oh, I didn't know she felt that way, or it didn't happen that way.
Well, I think we've arrived at a point where I'd like to hear you talk more about your memoir. If you would, you have written a memoir, and it was split into two. Can you tell us the process at this point, at this stage?
Okay. I have
and give us the names of your memoirs.
Oh, okay. The first one is Ever Faithful to His Lead, a memoir about choices. And I actually use a dance metaphor because I love to dance. And what happened is through the editing and revision and feedback process, people would point out, you know, you have a lot of dance scenes, you know, in this, you know, and you should do something with that. You should kind of thread that through. And then the title came out of something I had written, and it didn't. I've been writing this for 4 years, and the title came out, and I went to a writing conference in August of this year, and I was going to do a read aloud. We had a session, and I was going to read my preface, and that line, "Ever faithful to his lead," was in the preface, And as I was practicing with another colleague, we looked at each other. I said, that's it. That's my title. So that's how that came about. It's about getting into and out of two abusive, emotionally abusive relationships. And what I do is I weave in the narrative. The question that drives the narrative is, how does a young woman from a loving, stable family, which I had, make so many self-defeating decisions, make so many good decisions about her career, nursing, I tie that in, yet so many poor choices about relationships with men.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about finding my voice. And, you know, so it's a transform. I kind of weave in, and my faith, too. There's a spiritual aspect to this as well.
Is the his God or your first husband?
Well, ever faithful to his lead is like I was ever faithful to all these men without really discerning.
He as being a mortal, flawed man. Okay.
Right. But then, eventually, my redemption comes with the awareness of capital H-I-S, God in my
okay.
life. Yeah. So it is, it does have a Christian theme. I think we're supposed to warn people of that. So nobody will be offended.
Well, I would just suggest that that's a good role of the back cover, is to identify your audiences.
Yeah.
And, audiences is always caveat reader, caveat lector, I guess you'd say. So I'm not sure that I would say that that it's a warning, but I think the back cover is a great place to identify the audiences that are likely to find
right.
this book of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And this book, how can people get this book?
Well, it has to be published first.
It has to be published. Are you, so do you have, are you?
Well, I have it with a small publisher who's on the fence about it. I've had several rejections from other publishers, so I'm in the query process. I'm at the point of I may query a couple other small publishers. I'm not going to go the agent traditional route because I don't have time for that, to be honest with you. I want my story out there. It's been professionally, developmentally copy edited, 4 levels of editing, plus 10 beta readers who've given me substantive feedback. And I've made a lot of changes and revisions. And I will hire a book cover designer. So I'm hoping it will be published by December of this year. That's my hope.
I presume that you will have information on your website and your blog. Perhaps you could give listeners.
Oh.
I certainly will put that on, on the membership page and all the info. But just right now, if somebody is listening in their car, listening to this, could you just give where they could find you?
Oh, well, the website is krpooler.com.
Spell that, please.
Krpooler.com.
So that's P-K, Catherine, or Kathy?
Yes, it's
R
is
Rachel or whatever.
Right.
And then P-O-O-L-E-R.
Right.
Okay. I had a client who had a name very similar to yours, except it was a German name, and there was an H thrown in there.
Oh.
I did want to spell it for the
yes,
the listener.
I know.
Kathy, alas, we are getting towards the end of our time together. I wonder if you have any words that you would leave with the listeners.
Yes, we all have a story to tell, and we need to believe in that story, and we need to just keep writing until the story that needs to be told reveals itself, and then we need to share it, because when we share our stories, we share our hope.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Kathy. It has been so stimulating. I want to encourage everybody listening to go to Kathy's blog. She writes every week, sometimes several times a week, and it is a fantastic way to stay connected in the memoir conversation. Our work is challenging, and we shouldn't overlook any supports that are available. So, Kathy, thank you. Good luck to you, and I look forward to reading your memoir.
Oh, thank you so much, Denny. It's been a pleasure.